I've known Rabbi Zilberman for many, many years. Many, many years. And I knew he was in Paris, was very involved in both teaching halacha and practicing halacha on many fields. But this I did not know until very recently. I knew that in addition to a lot of teaching, a lot of mentoring here in yeshiva, both for younger fellows and for smicha guys, and he was very involved at the Beis Din. I knew about the Eben Hazar. I knew about Gittin. I knew about Chalitza. I learned from my research recently, Rabbi Zilberman is very, very centrally involved in the world of Geirus on a national level. And so it is a pleasure. I'm glad Rabbi Zilberman has made time for us. So, and this is going to be our climax in Chabura of the season.
Without further ado. Thank you, Rabbi Cohen. Pleasure to be here. Rabbi Cohen asked me to discuss a little bit about Geirus process. And then talk about some of the sugyas that you've been working on. I think we'll focus today on Geir Katan because time's not going to allow to discuss all the topics that are on the list. In terms of Geir's process, it's probably helpful just to make a historical note. We're going to start with the Gemara and then fast forward to recent literature. But as a historical note, for just about all of the medieval and modern, even into the post-Enlightenment period in Europe, conversion to Judaism was a rare event. It was illegal in most of Europe well into the 19th century. And aside from a few celebrated cases, it was rare to encounter a Geirus situation, which is why if you look in the Tshuva literature, up until well into the 19th century, there are very few Tshuvas that deal with the practical issues of Geirus. So for example, there's a Tshuva of Yaakov Eger, in the context of the Isser Talmud Torah Tanakh, you're not allowed to teach Nachmi Torah, Gemara in Sanhedrin. So the discussion, are you allowed to teach a Geirus candidate Torah? So we'll talk about that in practice in a few moments, but just for the historical note, Rabbi Akiva Eger in a tshuva addresses a situation, this is Chelek Aleph, Simen Mem Aleph in Tshuva's Kama, addresses a situation of someone who wanted to engage in Talmud Torah in order to proceed with the Geirus process, but he was in a country where Geirus was illegal. The Rabbi Akiva Eger is actually machmir on Talmud Torah Tanachrim, even in the context of Geirus. Rabbi Moshe writes in the Tshuva in Chelek Gimel Yerideya Simen Sadi, Chelek Gimel Simen Sadi, that it must be Rabbi Akiva Eger really was matir, and it was only in the context of his Tshuva where it wasn't practical to be Megayer anyway because the guy was living in a country where it was illegal. So then Rabbi Akiva Eger said you shouldn't engage in Talmud Torah. But in practice, as part of a Geirus process, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, there's no Isser Talmud Torah for those halachas that you need to know as far as how to act as a Jew. But that was reflective of the reality in most of Europe for many centuries that Geirus was illegal and sometimes punishable with death. There's a fascinating study done of the Pinchas of the London Beis Din from 1805 to 1855, and one of the things that emerges from the Pinchas of the London Beis Din during those years was that conversion to Judaism was prohibited legally in the United Kingdom and England as well at the time. And the London Beis Din therefore did not generally engage in Geirus because it was against the law, with two exceptions. If there was someone who had a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, so the person was halachically not Jewish, but as far as Dina de Malchusa goes, the London Beis Din was comfortable assuming that they're legally Jewish and therefore it didn't have a problem being Megayer someone under those circumstances where they had a Jewish father. And in a situation where the London Beis Din felt that it was necessary to be Megayer someone, they would send them to Amsterdam, which was one of the few places in continental Europe where conversion was legal. The Amsterdam Beis Din would be Megayer them. And then they come back to London. The London Beis Din wasn't comfortable relying on the Geirus of the Amsterdam Beis Din. Halachically, they didn't feel it was a valid Geirus. But as far as Dina de Malchusa, they felt comfortable that they weren't violating the law. So they'd send them to Amsterdam to do Geirus 1, and then they do another Geirus al-Chum, whatever you want to call it, when they got back to London. One of the fascinating figures in early American Jewish history is Rabbi Bernardi Lowy, who was a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. He also got a doctorate from the University of Budapest, and not many of the Chasam Sofer's Talmidim got doctorates. But somehow he ended up in America as probably the first or the second real European Talmud Chacham that became a Rav in America. So he was in Baltimore at the beginning of the Civil War. He gave such a stark secessionist Russia that they hired him to be the Rav of New Orleans in the Deep South. And then by the end of the war, when New Orleans turned, was captured pretty early on, he ended up giving a famous hesped for Lincoln. But be that as it may, he has fascinating tshuvas. He corresponded with the Gedolim in Europe. He corresponded with the Zvi Hirschkalischer and Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer and Rabbi Dathan Adler, now Nathan Adler, Rabbi Nathan Adler, the chief rabbi of the United Kingdom, so his son posthumously published a lot of his tshuvas, both in English and in Hebrew. So he has one tshuva, when he was in New Orleans, he has one tshuva about a case of someone who was living, I think, in Tennessee somewhere. A guy was married to a non-Jewish woman, and at one point they became more interested in Yadus, so she wanted to convert. They ended up going back to Europe, so they were in, I think it was The Hague, or somewhere where, like most of Europe, conversion was illegal. So they went. They wanted to do a geirus in the local Bezdin there. The Bezdin wouldn't do a geirus officially because it was illegal. So they sent them to some clandestine place where no one would know, and they did a geirus, but they wouldn't give them any paperwork because they didn't want to evidence the fact that they were going against the law. Then these people came back to the United States, and Bahayom, that the woman passed away, and she wanted to be buried with Rufus Yisrael, but they couldn't prove that she was Megayer. So that's what Rabbi Yelovi is done in the tshuva. Can you bury this person with Kfuras Yisrael? But that, again, reflects the fact that Geirus was a rarity and illegal in most of Europe well into the 19th century. So we talk about literature, there are Gemaras, there's a Shulchan Aruch, but a lot of the practical issues aren't fully fleshed out by the classic Tshuva Svarim until recent years. So what's the process of Geirus? If you read the Gemara in Yevamos, you get the impression that it's a one-shot deal. You show up one day, you decide you want to be Jewish, and you come out of the mikvah by the end of the day, right? The Gemara says at the bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph that Gerah Shabbat L'Sgayir B'Zman Zeh Omer Lo Mari Isa Shabbat L'Sgayir. Why are you interested in doing this? Iyata Yodesh Yisrael B'Zman Zeh Dibuyin D'chufim Z'chufim V'Turafim Yisrael Bamaleim. There's a lot of anti-Semitism. It's hard to be a Jew. Why would you want this upon yourself? Im Omer Yodeh Adivein Ekedai. If he says, I'm well aware, but Halavai should be Jewish anyway. Mekablan Osamiyad. We accept him right away. You inform him of a smattering of easy mitzvahs and hard mitzvahs. You tell him that's Schar V'Onesh. You tell him that when you're a Nachri, if you're Michal Shabbos, no one could care less. You eat Chalav, no one could care less. You become Jewish, you're Michal Shabbos, Chiyos Gila, you're Chalav Gila Karis. So there are consequences to being Jewish. You tell him that's Schar V'Onesh. And then at the end of the day, if he's still willing to go ahead, then you bring him to the mikvah. You don't make things too difficult to him. So what's the point of the mitzvahs, mitzvahs, kalas, mitzvahs, mitzvahs, chamuras, a smattering of a sample of different mitzvahs? So the Bach explains that you want to balance. You want to make sure, the Beis Yosef already quotes from the Smag, that we're concerned about buyer's remorse. That the guy shouldn't say, after you megayer him, had I known how difficult it would be to be Jewish, I never would have done this. So does that mean I never would have done this and the geirus isn't chal? I never would have done this, and he ends up being a Yisrael Shechas Wusur, was like a mummer, not clear. But we're worried about the buyer's reward. The Bach says, you want to find the balance. On the one hand, you have to tell him this is a serious thing. On the other hand, if he's really sincere and committed, we don't want to push him away. We want to tell him there's also, it's not only onus, but there's also schar, that there's a lot of reward for doing the mitzvahs and being a proper Jew. And the Meiri has a line. Meiri writes, so why do we tell him? So the Bach says, so what's the point of mitzvahs, mitzvahs, kalas, mitzvahs, mitzvahs, chamus? We tell him there are a lot of hard mitzvahs, but they're easy mitzvahs too. That not everything is difficult. The Meiri says, no, we tell him even the mitzvahs, mitzvahs, kalos are to discourage him because a non-Jew isn't used to being governed in every minutia of his life. You have to tell the person that there's a way to tie your shoes in the morning. Everything we do is governed by Allah. So even the mitzvahs kalos, even the easy, simple things, are to try to dissuade and discourage him that this is a hard thing to keep to because halacha governs every detail of our lives. But so you read the Gemara, you get the impression that the person shows up one day to Beis Din, says they want to be Jewish, have a conversation, and then by the end of the day, is Jewish. So we'll see in a moment it doesn't really work that way, and it shouldn't work that way. But you may get that impression initially from the psukim in Rus also. So we're almost holding my shavuos. So the simple reading of the psukim, it sounds like Rus and Orpah did not convert before they married Machlon Ukelion. That's what the Medrash Rabba says, that lo girim velo bilosam, that there was no geirus. That's what Rashi explains in the psukim beginning of Megillas Rus, that there was no geirus. Until after Machlon and Kilian die, and they're on the way back to Eretz Yisrael, so then Rus is Megayer after a conversation with Naomi. Ibn Ezra says, how could that be? How could it be that Malcolm Kill, you know, Chazal assumed were tzaddikim, would have married Nashim Nachriya, so it must be that they did convert beforehand. So anyway, look at this problem. According to Rashi, according to the Medrash, Hayitachin, that Malcolm Kill married non-Jewish women. According to the Ezra, what are you going to do with the Pesukim? It sounds like Naomi's giving them a choice to go away. If they're really Jewish, how do you give them a choice to go away? The Bach has a sefer on Megillas Rus called Meshiv Nefesh, commentary on Megillas Rus. So he has the following suggestion, that maybe what happened was that really there was a Geirus in Midyan, that Rus and Orpah converted, but they converted L'Shem Dover, they converted for ulterior motivation. So that's the sugya in Yevamos Kaf Daled, maybe Rabbi Reis spoke about it last week, that if you convert for ulterior motivations, B'dievet Kulam Geirim Hei Mipaske, that even if you should have been Megayer someone in the first place, but Lemaisa, if you were Megayer then, and there was a proper Kabbalah some mitzvahs, so then the Geirus is a good Geirus, at least B'dievet. So the Bach suggests that what was going on here, they converted, they were Megayer, but it was L'Shem Dover. So it was for ulterior motivations. So as the Rambam has the Lashon, the many explanations to what the Rambam meant, that under the circumstances, if a person is Megayer, the Rambam is talking about Geirei, Davin, Shlomo, Melech, where the Gemara says in Ayin Ches, in the time of Davin, Shlomo, they were Mekabel Geirim, but they were about, they didn't Shelet Yota, so they were Megayer Geirim. So it was the unofficial ad hoc but they didn't. So Rambam is the Lashon, that in that situation, totally, you have to wait, that she's married, until you see what's going to happen in the end. So Bach says, so questionable what that means. Does that mean that the Geirus isn't 100% halakhically valid, but maybe that's what happened here, says the Bach, that there was a Geirus, it was for ulterior motivation, and then you're trying to figure out, was this really a good Geirus, and to reaffirm it, and that was a conversation between Rus and Naomi. The Rav Avadia has a commentary on Megillas Rus printed in the end of the Chazon Avadia in the Chazon Avadia in the volume on Yontif. So he says maybe the Machlon and Kilion and Naomi were arguing about the following Machlokas Rishonim. You probably saw Machlokas Rishonim. What elements of Geirus are for what elements of Geirus is a Bezdin Makif? So the position of the Bali Tosos is that Bezdin is not ma'akev for a meal and tefillah. If you do at least b'di'avid a geirus without a bezdin, if you do a meal without a bezdin, you do a tefillah without a bezdin, it's not likuba. According to Tosos, the only thing that's likuba is kabbalas ha-mitzvahs. The declaration of kabbalas ha-mitzvahs has to be with ne'bezdin. And the Rambam, maybe the Rif, assume 2 days in Shulchan Aruch that bezdin is ma'akev for meal and maybe for tefillah. So Machlon, there's no Bezdin in Midyan. There weren't any other Jews. So the only Jews were Machlon and Kilion. There's no Bezdin. So they held that Bezdin is Ma'akev for anything. Maybe one day in Tosfos like that. Right? One day in Tosfos says it's Ma'akev at least for Kabbalah Mitzvos. Implicitly, one day in Tosfos assumes that Bezdin is Ma'akev for anything. So they held the Bezdin is Likuva, but Naomi held that a Bezdin is Likuva, so they weren't really Jewish yet, and that's why they needed to do another Geirus later on. So if you assume that there was a Geirus going on here when Naomi and Rus are traveling back to Eretz Yisrael, so that also sounds like a quick process. It was a conversation, and then she's Megayer. But even there, presumably, they were exposed to a frum lifestyle for a while previously. So that's a comment that the Munkacher has. The Chuvas Minchas Elazar, Chela Dalet Simen Sanuk Gimel, Chela Dalet Simen Sanuk Gimel. He writes, he's writing in the context of tefillah. That you have to teach a person who's in the process of being Megayer how to daven properly, how to read a Siddur properly. He says, B'yamim Kamodim, you had a Shliach Tzibur, there was mostly everyone, so it wasn't such a big deal if you didn't know how to daven on your own. But nowadays, no one relies on the Shliach Tzibur. You have to know how to daven. So he says, if you're going to be Megayer someone without teaching them how to daven, then you're being mashal them because they're going to convert and then they won't know how to daven, and they're going to violate Averus by not davening properly. But presumably he means it for other mitzvahs as well. The person is very sincere, but he doesn't know anything, so the first Shabbos he's going to be Mechal Shabbos, he's not going to keep kosher properly, won't keep Taras and Mishmacha properly. You have to educate him. What does it mean to live like an observant Jew? So Kabbalah Mitzvahs means in practice. You have to know what you're doing, so you do it properly, and you're not going to violate aveiros the first Shabbos that you're Jewish. So even though, in theory, on some level, the Gemara says that you shouldn't unduly delay anything, but there has to be a process through which a candidate for Gevurah is going to learn the ropes to become integrated into society, from community, and have the proper knowledge base in order to live his or her life as an observant Jew. So, typically speaking, Bizman Hazeh, we usually say that a conversion process lasts on average 2 years, meaning from the time someone comes into the door and expresses an interest without any prior background, so they have to be educated in halacha, in hashkafa, and become integrated into a firm community. That takes time, and that takes the effort on the part of many individuals that facilitate that integration and that education. So in America, the last 15 or so years, about a little under 15 years ago, the RCA, the Bezin of America, created a system that we use at Rosh Yeshiva's GPS, Gevurah Policies and Standards, which is a network of Batei Din around the country that operate under a uniform set of standards under auspices and do Gevurah as such. Until that time, in many areas of the United States, especially in New York, Gevurah was hefker. And that created a lot of problems because no one would know who's who. There were uneven standards. A generation ago, the most typical mode of performing a gerus was that you had the local rabbi. You would take two balabatim, hopefully balabatim who were shomrei Torah mitzvos, put together an ad hoc bezin, and the megayer, or anyone from the community that needed a gerus. So standards are sometimes uneven. There could be a lot of pressure under those circumstances where you have the president of the shul whose son is dating a non-Jewish girl and he wants to be megayer, so rabbi, convert the girl for us. So a lot of those kinds of pressure situations that are alleviated when you have a more central bezdin that could be the filter, so to speak, to independently determine whether the person who's been megayer is roi lekach and has gone through the proper process leading up to it and is properly going to be mekabel mitzvahs. So one of the central pillars of the system, the way we set it up, is the need to have a sponsoring rabbi, to have a local, typically a local shul rav, who's responsible for the education and integration of the conversion candidate into the community, making sure that they're showing up in shul on a regular basis, that they're being connected to other families in the community, that they get invited for meals on Shabbos, and they're set up with chavrusas or tutors or people to learn with them in the community so that they can become part of the firm environment and know what they need to know leading up to the gerus process. So in Eretz Yisrael, things are a little bit different. They don't have the same kind of tehillah structure that we have in America or the same centrality of the shul that we have in America. So there, the Marach HaGiur, which is the official gerus arm of the Rabbanut, so they don't have a notion of sponsoring rabbi. They have what's called the Mishpacha Melava, a escorting family, a family that the conversion candidate has to spend some Shabbosos with, but a little bit of a different system. But here we found that having a sponsoring rabbi who's heavily invested in the process and guiding the gerus candidate is very critical in making sure that it's a successful process with a successful outcome. Okay, so that's a little bit about dumb, about process. And I think we're going to talk about ger katan. So the Gemara tells us in Ksubis, and Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, Amr Funa, Ger Katan Matbilin Asal Das Bezdin. The Ger Katan were Matbil Al Das Bezdin. My Kamash Malad, this Chusulav is Achalav, and Shalav a fun of. This is a Chiddush here that we operate based on the notion of Zachin, that the Katan is lacking Das to affect his own Geras. So you need to impose that Das from an outside source. And acquire something on behalf of the Kata, namely his Jewish status. So Tanina, that's a Kala Torah Kula, Halacha Zachon Adam, Shelo Bifanav. Where it says, So you might have thought that it's not as close because an Ovid Chacham would rather live a life of Hefkeiros. Kamash Balan, that's true by a Gadol, who's Tam Tam Yisura, but Katan is considered a Zuchus. So the Gemara here establishes that in order for Ger Katan to be effective, it has to be done Al Das Basbin. Says Rashi, Ger Katan, in Ein Lo Av, the Imo Hevi Yassel is Gair. We're talking about a case where there's no father, and the mother brings him to be Megair. So it sounds like, if there's a father, there's no need for Das Basbin. If there's no father, so then that's where you need Das Basbin. So you have to figure out why that's the case. What does the father provide that that you need the father for, that Bezin needs to stand in for? And also, how dafka is father as opposed to mother? Rashi says if there's no father, and the mother brings him. So why is it only the father that can provide the das and not the mother? How dafka is this comment of Rashi? So the way the Ritva quotes Rashi, the Ritva here quotes Rashi as Havio Aviv V'imo. Not that Havio Imo, there's no father, but father and mother bring him together. Afapi Shalon is Gairu He. Even though mother and father are not converting themselves. So in that version, it sounds like if mother and father convert themselves, then you don't need Das Basbin. If they're not converting themselves, it doesn't make a difference if father or mother bring. Even if both bring, you still need Das Basbin. And the Rashba understands Rashi similarly, at least in the sense that there's no distinction between a father and mother. But Rashi Lefaneinu is not saying that. Rashi Lefaneinu says, Ein lo av, if there's no father. If there's a father, you don't need Das Basbin. If there's no father, it sounds like you do need Das Basbin. It says the Shita Mekubetzes there, quotes Rashi, Vikasha, Manavshach, Im imun is gairu imo lamali das basdin. If the mother's converting with him, what do you need das basdin for? That should be sufficient. If they're not converting together, then even if the father brings him, it shouldn't work. I mean, what's critical should be, is a family converting together? And then they can provide the requisite das. If they're not converting together, it shouldn't make a difference who brings it. Says the Shita, the Efshar, the Kol Sheyesh Lo Avet Ein, Umevino So, this guy here, Afal Gav De Einam, this guy here, Mimo, Nichalei Mimayda Avdilei Avet V'imo, V'eino Sarot Das Basbin. So the Shita says, V'das Rashi, that, okay, Avet V'slat Dafka, it's Imo too, but the point is, who's bringing it to Basbin even if they don't convert? So even if the mother and father aren't converting themselves, but they're bringing the Katan to convert, so then, Nichalei Mimayda Avet Avuon, that is Nichalei to the Katan, to do what the parents want, and in that situation, there's sufficient das provided by the parents that you don't need das best. But in terms of Rashi himself, the way we have Rashi Lefaneinu, that there is a distinction, it sounds like, between Av and Aim. But what's the role of the father here? Why does the father have a more unique status? And the Iri writes, Dibur Maskel Goy Katan. Miri writes, Mabilin Osan Al Das Basdin, Kolomer. Sha'osam Hagoyim Ligairo Modina Sadavar Lebasdin. The people that bring the Katan to Basdin to convert him, they inform Basdin, Umagairin Oso Al Datam. And we're Megayir the kid Al Datam, Ki'ilu Heim Avosav Sholzeh. Ki'ilu, the people bringing him are the father. She'en yono masur lahem, kederech she'en yana bein masur la'av. Lafnisa lebris ulukedusha semuna. So, just as a father has certain religious responsibility for the religious upbringing and the development of a son, that exists even, it sounds like, in the Umas Olam. So, a father has that kind of responsibility. The father can dictate the religious development of a son, so that's why where father brings him, that provides the das. And if there's no father, so then Bezdin stands in and provides Adas in place of the father as those responsible for the religious development of the son, which allows them to be Megayer, this kid, as well. The Or Sameach, Perichas Avadim Alachakaf, Perichas Avadim Alachakaf assumes that this power to bring, for a non-Jewish father to bring the son to Megayer, stems from the general right that the Rambam talks about in Avadim Peretes Alachaveis, that a father has the right to sell his son La'abdus. No? Rambam writes, Echad akoda evad kanadi b'Yisrael, o min ger toshav, o min akim shu kavish tachas yadenu, o mi echad mishar umos shiesh lo limkors asma li Yisrael evad, v'reyu evad kanani, kanani l'chol dover. So, a kona, if you acquire an evad kanani from Israel or from a ger toshav or for a non-Jew, so that person can sell himself as an evad kanani. Then the rabbi writes, "V'chein amocher banav ubnosav shenemar mihem dechumish rochasam asher imahem imachem asher lida barzachem kol echad me'elo reyu ke'evad kanani l'chol davar." So that did amocher banav ubnosav, that a non-Jew has a right to sell his children as an evad kanani. So that may, on some basis, form the basis that allows a non-Jewish father to bring his kids to convert. And then that's the requisite das that's provided for that case. Okay, so we'll come back in a little while to this position of Rashi and the significance of Av relative to anyone else in Ger Katan, as I may have a significant Afgamina Lahalach. The Gemara goes on to present the Din of Macha, the member of Rav Yosef, of Higdili Cholom Limchas, that if Geirus is performed on a katan, when that katan becomes a gadol, he has the option of bimoch, he has the option of opting out. So what is the nature of this macha? Why is there such an act-out possibility that you can decide you don't want to be Jewish if you were megayer as a katan? So some of the Rishonim are implicitly bothered how Ger Katan operates without Kabbalah Samitzvahs. In general, in order for a Geirus to be valid, there has to be a Kabbalah Samitzvahs on the part of the Ger or Gioris. Where's the Kabbalah Samitzvahs for a Katan? So the Shita is a line. Af l'gav d'sar Kabbalah, hani mili hecha d'efshar, aval b'katan lo efshar. So that requirement of Kabbalah Samitzvahs isn't li'ikuv in the following sense, so wherever it's feasible, it's ma'akev. Where it's not feasible, it's not. So when it comes to Ger Katan, it's not feasible to have Kabbalah Samitzvahs because the Katan is Lav Ardas. And therefore, the Geirus will be valid even absent that Kabbalah Samitzvahs. But Tosus assumes, Tosus in the beginning of Ben Sarah Mora, Sanhedrin Samachasim Veis, Tosus assumes that there is a requirement of Kabbalah Samitzvahs for Ger Katan, and that Kabbalah Samitzvahs is achieved when it becomes a Gadol. And that's what Macha reflects, that there has to be an affirmative, or at least an implied, Kabbalah Samitzvahs at the time of Gadlus. And Macha reflects an e-Kabbalah Samitzvahs. Macha reflects that there is no Kabbalah Samitzvahs, and therefore the Geirus is incomplete. Tosus has a line, Mitoch she-gadlo v'lo michu hainu Kabbalah, that when a Ger Katan becomes a Gadol, and is not Mocha, that constitutes a Kabbalah Samitzvah. So Ger Katan needs Kabbalah Samitzvahs, but that Kabbalah Samitzvahs is achieved when there's no Macha. The Ritva there has a line, which we don't accept Lalacha, but the way the Ritva presents the Bali Tosvos sounds like there actually has to be a formal Kabbalah. It's not enough that there's an Imacha, not enough that the person isn't vocally Mocha, but he actually, the Ger Katan, when he becomes a Gadol, you actually have to have a formal Shach Vitaryah where you are Modia Mitzvos, Modia Skarva Onesh. And then if he's accepting of that and isn't Mocha, then the Mecha window has closed. But it's not enough to just enter Gadlus without Mecha, but there has to be an actual Shach Betari, it sounds like maybe even in front of Bezdin, again, we don't accept this halacha, but there has to be some give and take where there's a informing of the katan, of the ger katan, who's now a gadol, of Schar Ve'onesh, of the requirement to keep mitzvos, and then that's where he has the option of being bimocha or not. Pashup Shad is that macha, the mechanism of macha is mikan ul-haba. That if a ger katan is mocha, so it doesn't mean that Mefrei, he wasn't Jewish from the get-go. Macha is mikan ulahaba, but that's a deon in Achronim, Chuvas Chas and Sofer, Yerodea, Simon, Reshin, and Gimel, and other places. That's not necessarily Pasha. So what exactly, Ritva notwithstanding, what exactly is Macha, and what is the window for Macha? The Rishonim were bothered, some implicitly, some explicitly, that Iyav Shalitzamtzin. Does he dilu yichol l'nuchos mean at the second that he becomes a gadol? So if you hold me ace la ace, so you have to figure out exactly what time he was born, and then if that minute passes, there's no option of macha anymore. What is the window of macha? So some of the Rishonim have a line, the Ritva, for example, that macha means mocha. The holecha is mitoch katnus la'achir gadlus shelo gidla sha'achas b'lo macha. So there has to be a continuum of macha carrying you over from katnus to gadlus. So you're talking about a female. So she's deiver bas mitzvah. So she says anumochen, anumochen, anumochen for 12 hours straight, and then you have a continuum of macha that takes you from katnus into godless. Some of the other Rishonim, Tosos, but more explicitly Tosa Rush, sounds like there needs to be some kind of Maisa that either reflects a lack of Macha or a Macha. So the Lashon of Tosa Rush is Higdila. See, he's probably the same problem that how can you have b'mitzamsen karefayin? He says, what does it mean, macha? Higdila velo asa maisa yadus mishigdila. So if she became a gedola and she doesn't do a maisa yadus, a Jewish thing, when she becomes a gedola, yichal limchas. So long as she doesn't do anything Jewish, she has the option of being mocha. Aval higdila sha'achas velo mitsa, but if she becomes a gedola and doesn't do any macha, shenaga minag yadus, that she does something Jewish, shuvein yichol limchas. So it sounds like you have to do some Jewish act, and once you do that Jewish act, then that precludes the possibility of macha. So at the moment the clock strikes, whatever it strikes, when you on the day of gadlus, so if you're mocha before you do anything Jewish, then that's a mocha. Once you do something Jewish, then the window has expired. So what exactly does that mean? That you have to have, if you do, you say one bracha, or you do one mitzvah, then that's a maisa yadus. So the truth is that it sounds a little bit like that in Shulchan Aruch. Medvar Mamurim, Bishalon Simon Rei Samaches Ifches, Medvar Mamurim Bishalon Nahag Minagadus Mishehigdil, that he wasn't knowing a Minagadus. Aval Nahag Minagadus Mishehigdil Shuvin Yochel Limchos. But once he's knowing a Minagadus, then the window for Macha has closed. So, not so clear what constitutes a Minagadus. How broad would we define a minagadus? There's some discussion. The way these Rishonim formulated is you have to do a minagadus, do something Jewish. So what about the opposite? What if someone does an aveira? So is the act of performing an aveira itself a implicit macha, or does there have to be a more formal macha? You know, the way the Rush formulates it is that once you do a minagadu, so then the window of macha is closed. So what? Let's say you don't do a minagadu, so you don't do macha, or let's say even if you do some minagadu, but you're also doing minhage antayadu. So does the performance of averos at that point create some kind of implicit macha? So Reb Chaim Ozer assumes no. Chela Gimel Simen Kafkes in the Achiezer. Chela Gimel Simen Kafkes. He writes, "Be'emes Mai Shichalus Hashabbos Shara Averos Ein Zakeh Machal Averos." That even if a ger katan is machal Shabbos and doing other averos, that's not a macha. Rasha over averos to Yisrael ubevadi daviger. That's considered a Yisrael who's over averos. Meaning, if there's no actual macha, he doesn't say I don't want to be Jewish, even if he's violating averos. So that's a Yisrael. That's a Yisrael shachata. And others aren't so convinced. Our Abbez is a funnel of Velcro, Gedalia Del Schwartz, was at least choshesh for the possibility that living a non-observant lifestyle is an implicit macha. The Abagir Kaz will talk about in a few moments what needs to be in place in order to affect the Ger Kata and Bishaito. But let's say you have the best scenario of Ger Katan. You have a family that is basically Shomrei Torah Mitzvos, and they adopt a non-Jewish child, the Megayer the kid, Al Das Bezdin, and then by the time the kid's Bar Mitzvah, the family is less observant, the kid's less observant, he's not a Shomer Shabbos. If you ask him, do you want to be Jewish, he'll say yes, because culturally he has a Jewish identity, but they're not living a frum lifestyle. So is that considered a macha? He wants to be Jewish, but he's not acting Jewish. So that's that is a question. Reb Moshe has the following chiddush, if you will, that l'maisa we tend to be choshish for, even though it's not necessarily muskan. Reb Moshe yoredei chelak aleph simen kuf samach aleph and simen kuf samach beis. Reb Moshe assumes that there were two ingredients necessary to invoke macha. That you need to know that you were a ger katan. You need to know that you weren't born Jewish and you had a geirus as a katan. And you need to know that there's a din of macha. So, you know, let's say, as was much more common a generation ago, a family adopts a child. They never tell him he was adopted. So, he's 13, 15, 18, never knew he was adopted. At age 20, he finds out that he was adopted. He finds out that he has the option of macha. So Reb Moshe assumes at that point the clock starts and he could be macha. Once he finds out that he wasn't born Jewish, he was a ger katan, and he has the ability to be macha, he can be macha then. So Reb Moshe thinks that it's important to tell a kid when he becomes bar mitzvah who was adopted or who was converted as a minor that he wasn't born Jewish and he has the option of macha, because otherwise things could be a lot worse. It's much more likely that a 20-year-old would want to opt out than a 13-year-old. 13-year-old, if he's growing up in a frum household, presumably wants to keep on doing whatever his family's doing. But once he's 20 and out of the house, so chances are greater, depending on where he ends up, that he might want to be mocha. So Moshe thinks that it's prudent and strongly advisable to inform a ger katan by the time of bar mitzvah that he was a ger katan and he has the option of macha. And the Yom Shah Shlomo basically says that. Ksubas, here in the first parak, Simon Lamed Hei, Marshal writes, V'nir ha'dik dilu en yucholim limchos, haynu shenoda lehem shagiru osam abezit, o'aviyam. Aval im hayatana mod, Lozakru davri mashagiru, but they never knew they were converted. V'achakaki shagilu doda lemadavar yucholim limchos, So even if it's years later, they've been acting Jewish for many years, and they only found out that they were gay now, you can be mocha at that point. Rav Shtormach has a tshuva, chayla dalet tshuva simen haga, simen v'yishlam and aleph, chayla dalet simen v'yishlam and aleph, about a kid who was a little bit of a troublemaker, who was a ger katan, and when he became bar mitzvah, he said, nah, I don't like this Jewishness thing, Judaism thing. I don't want to do it, but I'm still living in my parents' house, so I'll keep on being Shomer Shabbos until I'm 18, and once I'm 18 and out of the house, then I'm dishing it all. And lo and behold, by the time he's 18, he's a proper yeshiva bacher, and he's not dishing anything. So was there any credence to be given to that statement he made when he was bar mitzvah, that did that constitute a macha? Really, I'm ocha, but I'll keep on doing this this Judaism thing for a few years to make my parents happy. So, and if it was a macha, so then now he wants to be Jewish, he would need another geirus. So Rosh Shulchan thinks it's a strong tzad to say that the geirus was good. If a 13-year-old says that I don't want to be Jewish, that's a rebellious streak. That's not really reflective of his real intent, especially if he's still living in his parents' home and is following what they do. But he's not 100% convinced. He's not sure, but he's noted to think that the original geirus was still good, and you don't have to be concerned about the macha. So l'maisa, we tend to be choshesh for Moshe's concern that you don't want to have a suffix situation, but unfortunately when it comes to ger katan, sometimes you end up with messy suffix situations where there's something that could questionably constitute a macha, and it's not so pleasant. Coming back to where we started, Haviyaso Av, so the Chasam Sofer assumes that the din, Shuvas Chasam Sofer, Yeridei Reishon and Gimel, based on the Rashi, that Macha is correlated to Das Beis Din, that where there is the Geirus have to rely on Das Beis Din, so then you have the option of Macha. But if Haviyaso Av, so if a family converts together, father and kid. So then the Chasam Sofer thinks, based on that Rashi, there's no Zechus Macha. So in that kind of a Ger Katan, then a family, a non-Jewish family converts together, father and son convert together, so then there's no option of Macha. There's a comment to the Tosfos Rinnan, on the side of the Gemara, in the Daf Yud Aleph, that sounds like, for purposes of Ger Katan, you have to take the following into consideration. That in general, there's a halacha that there's no shiurim by Bnei Noach, right? The Bnei Noach is chayiv for gezel pachos mi shav v'pruta. Shiurim are only halacha for Yisrael and not for Bnei Noach. So godless of age 12 or 13, that's a shiur. That even the most, that in order to be gadol min haTorah, you have to have simanim. Even if the person is highly intelligent. But that may not be true for Bnei Noach. So if you have an intelligent 9-year-old Bnei Noach, so in Hilchos Bnei Noach, he may be considered a gadol. So we emerge according to that, that maybe you can't be Megayer a Ger Katan within a certain window, let's say 9, 10, 11, 12, where in Dina Yisrael, he'd be a gadol. In Dina HaKatan, in Dina Bnei Noach, he's a gadol. So does Ger Katan presuppose that the person is a Katan Hilchos Bnei Noach? So I believe that not the Riblas is like one of the premier Masadri Gittin in the United States for many, many decades, was Choshesh for this Lalacha, and would have been a guy or a Katan, I don't remember if it's 7, 8, 9, or wouldn't do a Ger Katan within that window up to 13. There's a letter in the Yeshiva archives of the Rav David Lifshitz collection. They have their letter that correspondence between Rav David and Rav Nathan on this topic. Rav Nathan wrote a letter to Rav David explaining his position. So what constitutes a chus? Zachim la'adam shalav b'fanav. So you have to be megayer al das beis din based on the notion of zachim. So under what circumstances is it considered to be a chus to be megayer a child? So Rav Moshe has a couple of tshuvas, and this is what is commonly referred to as Rav Moshe style Ger Katan, Rav Moshe's position of Ger Katan, which Rav Moshe and Tshuva only really says as an Efsha. Rav Moshe writes first in Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Nunches, Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Nunches, tshuva from 1950, written to his brother-in-law, Rabbi Nechemiah Katz of Toledo, Ohio, who learned in Slutsk. And then I think in YU also. So he writes, he's talking about a questionable situation of a gerus. So he writes that under these circumstances, there's a ger katan, so better to do another gerus if it becomes a gadol. Because it's not clear whether you could really say that the kid, if you're megayim as a cousin, was that really is chus? Lo bara dav medina zu shehu's chus. Kevish abem sinner rabim karsha chas v'shal liyish v'shav the kadom bari sirah. So you can't say it's chus to be megayim someone if they're going to grow up and be non-observant. Better you shouldn't be Jewish than to be mechal shabbos. And in Toledo, Ohio, in the 1950s. Highly unlikely that this kid is going to grow up to be a Shomer Shabbos. Ach efshar, shemichal makom huschus, maybe it's still huschus, sha'ach risha Yisrael adifi me'akom, maybe it's better to be a Bechal Shabbos than to be a Nachri. V'gam huschus ma'achbas denichalei b'may da'avid a'aviv, if the father is coming to be Megayer also, or the mother is coming to be Megayer. So that's where Moshe writes as an efshar. Maybe you could argue it's still considered to be a schus, even if the child is going to grow up to be non-observant. So this was the practice of some bati din in America a generation ago, to be megayer children, even if they're being raised in non-observant households, because maybe that's still considered to be a schus to be Jewish under all circumstances. Rav Schechter quoted in this context of Mitzayin a tshuva of the Klei Chemda, written in Chemdas Yisrael, in the Maftechos v'Hosafos in the back, written when he was in America. Klei Chemda came to America twice, 1921 and 1926-27. He gave shiurim in our yeshiva, which at the time was in the Lower East Side. My friend, Rabbi Dr. Judah Goldberg, discovered in the Chemdas Yisrael that there's a reference to a tshuva that Shira gave him, Shira Sovitz Chanan, on Tesvav Tammuz, I think it was 1921. So he's Messiah that he gave Shira in our yeshiva. So he has his tshuva, in which he writes, he says, Yan Shazem Yikarov Kasam Neshuva Achas Bin Yenzev Hu Mishelos Hashkichos. Upo America Nishal Dimikam Rabbanim Azeh. So he was asked in America by many Rabbanim about the following Shaila, so he decides to print this in the Sefer, and this is a tshuva that he wrote to a Rabbi Zisman of Plotsk. So the original Shaila here is about a situation where they did, there was a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, and they did a bris on the kid. And some people are under the misimpression that that makes a kid Jewish. He says that's obviously not the case, because in order to have a gerus, you need to have tefillah, not just milah. That was one of the fights that Rabbi Elohi got into in New Orleans in the 1860s, that he made a takana, that the mold, there are a lot of intermarried couples, and the Jewish fathers wanted to give a milah to the kids, so he made a takana that the molim aren't allowed to do that. He had a correspondence with Rav Zvi Kalischer and Israel Hildesheimer about that, but not for now. So in the context of this tshuva, the Klei Chemda writes that it's probably not as close to be Mekayeh these kids as they're not going to end up being from, but he writes, Mikalmakom ledati, kevin debram is at the abba. V'im navo ledas Yisrael yukal liyos denavik mine zarmalia. Maybe it'll turn out okay. Maybe the kid will have Jewish kids, and maybe they'll be nice from kids. V'lechei tamid have a begedrus chus sheyavu lebeis Yisrael. So maybe it's always as close to become Jewish. V'befrat sheim yilava el bnei el beis Yisrael yukal liknas olam v'sha'achas. Ayde mitzvachas. That maybe, if he lends money to the Jews, he'll be kono lama sha'achas, ayde mitzvahachas. V'gedol asal nefashos, k'mo sha'asu achedu beis b'nei Yisrael v'America, v'shan machronim, shehechi yukama alafim nefashos mi'Yisrael, So if you're going to be begayer him, and he's going to become a philanthropist, and it'll save Jews in Europe financially, so maybe that's enough of a zchus to be Jewish. So that that seems to be in the Ramosha camp of what's considered a zchus. But many of the Achronim and Rishabda points out that this is the Psakha Mechuver and the consensus Psakha. Don't assume the way. Assume that in order to be a zchus, there has to be a reasonable expectation that the kid is going to grow up to be a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. That's what Rishabda quotes from the Rav. That's what Rav Kook has in Das Kohen Simen Kuf Mem Zayin. 3 day Eish in the old version, Chelik Bey Simen Sadivav, Chelik Bey Simen Sadivav. Zecher Yitzchak, Yitzchak Panovitcher, Simen Beis. Minchas Yitzchak Chela Gimel Simen Sadites, Vichahena Vichahena, and many many Achronim contemporary poskim are of the opinion that in order to be considered zchus, there has to be reasonable likelihood that the kid is going to grow up to be a Shomer Torah Umitzvahs. The problem is if you're megayer someone under lower circumstances, so then you're potentially into suffix of. So there's Rav Yashiv has Rav Yashiv was a dayan on the Beit Din HaGadol for many years, and the collection of Piskei Halacha, Piskei Din for the Beit Din HaGadol, the first volume of the Piskei Din Rabbanim, Chelek Aleph, Siman page 376, Chelek Aleph, page 376. There's a psalm from Beis Din, including Rav Yashiv and Rav Jolti, the Rav Yerushalayim. So they write that b'di'avad, if you're megayer someone where not everything was in place, so it's hard to say that it wasn't chal even b'di'avad. It's at least a suffix. So he says, lo yasa midei suffix here. So that's really a problem. Anytime you have this kind of remosha standard ger katan, you're ending up with a potential suffix. If you did a geirus under questionable circumstances, you weren't convinced at the time that the kid's going to grow up to be from. So our general policy is to only do a ger katan where minimally the family is Orthodox affiliated, they commit to send the kid to a Jewish day school, and there's at least significant Shmira Shabbos in the home, if not complete Shmira Shabbos. So you have the assumption that there's a better than even chance that the kid is going to grow up to be from. But that's the Geirus Katan sometimes could be messy. In a generation ago, even 10 years ago, the most common instances of Geirus Katan were situations of adoption. But with the increase of various forms of reproductive technology that we have, now the larger number of Geirus Katan situations are from cases of non-Jewish surrogates or non-Jewish egg donors. Adoption rates in the frum community, probably the world at large, are significantly down. And cases of children born through surrogates and through egg donors are significantly up. And that's where we have many of the ger katan shilas that we get. The question is, let's say you have a suffix situation there. According to half of the poskim, the halachic mother is the genetic mother. According to half of the poskim, the halachic mother is the surrogate. So if you have someone that's Jewish according to half the poskim, you have to do a geirus according to the other half. Do you have different standards of ger katan? You know, would you lower the bar as to what the expectation of the family needs to be in order to be megayer the kid? So generally speaking, we haven't, but that's an ongoing discussion whether that should be the case. But the messiest situations where you had post facto ger katan done years ago where the family wasn't so from. And then now, 20 years later, maybe the kid is more from. So the Reshefka quotes from the Shuvah of Elia Prushner, the Rav's other grandfather, that when you're evaluating his course, you evaluate based on the time of the Geirus. So at the time of the Geirus, it didn't look like they're going to end up raising a from kid, even if at time Bar Mitzvah ends up being from. So it's questionable whether the Geirus was good anyway. So these are all complicated cases that sometimes have to be dealt with based on the specifics of the case.
I think we're probably way out of time. Sorry.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
From the Sternbach's question about the allow me to say that would have worked? Meaning, can you really be mochel tonight?
It's not mochel tonight. The question is, maybe that's really a mochel. I'm mochel now. I don't want to be Jewish. I'll put on a show for the next few years to make my parents happy. But I'm mochel. So is that a real mochel? That's the question here.